Okay, I'm the last one. So, earlier today, can you hear me and all that? Earlier today, I hacked this story into bits so that I could read you a butchered version, which would not take up as much time. But I now notice that what I have is still too long. So I think that I'm going to lop the legs off so that we'll have a sort of rendered creature. I hope it's not too ugly in the end. This is called Snow White, Rose Red, the abridged version. I met the girls and instantly liked the girls. Of course I liked the girls. A girl is better than a feast. This was before the arrest, before the indictment. The girls were sisters and lived during the summer in one of those upstate mansions built by robber barons who made their fortunes off railroads and steel and unfair business practices. It was in the lower peaks of the Adirondacks, the southern part with glassy lakes and green slopes and white-spotted fawns. The girls called their summer house the cottage, to distinguish it from the apartment, which was a 10,000-square-foot penthouse on Fifth Avenue near Washington Square Park. Their father was in real estate, but no one ever saw him. Correction, from time to time we caught sight of him briefly, the girls and I, getting in or out of a long, gleaming car. Once from the woods, I spotted him walking down to the dock in a pale gray suit, his phone held to his ear. He looked like a groom doll on a wedding cake. I wanted to tear his legs off. Their mother, a former ballerina from Madrid, was both anorexic and mentally slow. At twilight, on the grounds of the massive yet log cabin-style robber baron mansion, dozens of deer stood around, their graceful necks lowered, eating the grass. There's an abundance of deer up there due to the hunters who've killed off the animals that were supposed to be preying on them. So the deer. And the girls, equally graceful with their light-carrying laughter and long limbs, spun glow-in-the-dark hula hoops or played croquet with ancient peeling mallets as the purple dusk fell. We only met because I came out of the woods one night. I came out of the woods and walked right across the rolling lawn, scattering the bambies. The sun was setting over the lake, and a slight breeze rippled the water. I admit the girls appeared frightened. What Rosa told me later was this: that first few seconds, they actually mistook me for a bear. They'd never seen a homeless guy before. They were that sheltered, even though they lived in downtown Manhattan. Trust me, it can be done. And though I wasn't technically homeless, I had that same dirty, hirsute aspect. I'm not a small man, but tall and barrel-chested, and that June evening I wore filthy clothes and a long beard and needed badly to bathe in the lake. I had a home, an abandoned airplane hangar in the woods, but to girls that pampered and young, there's no perceptible difference between an aging hippie and a transient. So they were frightened at first, but I held up my hands as I walked up to the porch. I held up my hands like a man who was surrendering. Those girls were good. Plenty of rich girls aren't, we all know that. But those two girls were innocent. I don't know how they turned out that way, with the mother who wasn't all there and the father who wasn't there at all. That goodness came from them like milk from a rock. Often at dawn or dusk, when the deer and the girls were out, I was the only company they had. I kept a low profile and didn't throw the frisbee back and forth with them in case someone could see us from the house. Usually we stood together and we talked, a little out of sight. Once or twice they sat on the end of the dock and trailed their feet through the water, and I swam, only my head, above the darkening surface. From the high bedroom windows of the cottage's second floor, that wouldn't have looked like anything. The girls let me use the canoes in the boathouse, even encouraged me, and some mornings I would row out into a hidden bay and sit and drift, trying idly to fish in the shade of a red pine. Snow would leave me sandwiches. Rose offered small hotel bottles of shampoo and told me to use them. These girls were both honest. Once Snow said to me, "You smell not too good. Did you know?" I told her that I washed my clothes whenever I could. I tried to swim and use soap on myself, but now and then I lost track and missed a day or two. "I wish you wouldn't," said Snow wistfully. My back hurt from sleeping on the cement floor of the hangar, and I ended up asking the sisters for aspirin. Then Rose said I should sleep in the cottage, which had more bedrooms than could easily be counted. There was a servant's entrance, and none of the help used it. I could sneak in at night and sleep in a comfortable bed, which had down pillows and high thread count sheets. I protested at first. I feared the other members of the household. But it was silent when I snuck in there at night after the girls had gone to bed. It was so quiet that it almost seemed to me they lived there by themselves, and food and water were furnished to them by invisible hands. So I often slipped in by the servants' narrow stairs and slept in my private room, tucked up under the roof. I set my wristwatch alarm and crept out at the crack of dawn. The cottage doors were never locked during the summer months. The family was always there, the family or the staff. The Mexican groundskeeper rode around on his lawn tractor uselessly, mowing nothing, happy to sit aloft. The live-in maid smoked cigarettes near the garden shed and slipped away to have sex with him in the bushes. One day the mother had a brief flash of life and donned her sparkling tennis whites. She ran outside and hit a few balls feebly with Rose on the clay tennis court. Meanwhile, Snow, on the sidelines, took snapshots for the family album. It was a rare occasion to see the mother outside in the sun, acting alive like that. But only 15 minutes passed before the mother went inside again. She threw her racket down and blurted something I couldn't quite make out. I saw the girls' faces as they watched her go. Their faces were both sad and calm. The girls were resigned to this beautiful, semi-retarded mother, with her spidery limbs and odd tantrums. Perhaps she was never a ballerina, I thought to myself. There aren't too many retarded ballerinas in this world, is my perception of the thing, although there certainly are a few who, like the mother, starve themselves. That evening, around dusk, the girls came swimming with me in the lake. Rose lathered my hair up with shampoo and ducked my head under, laughing. When I came up spluttering and trying to catch my breath, Snow pushed my head under again, so both of them were playfully drowning me. Rose said, "What would he look like with no beard?" Snow looked at me too, considering, and then climbed up onto the dock and ran into the house. She came back in a minute with shaving equipment and cut off the part of my beard that hung. Then they watched while I sat in the shallows and, with Rose holding up the mirror, shaved off the stubble that was left. "He's not that bad," she said, when I was done. I dipped my face under and came up again, wiping the water away from my eyes, the flecks of girl-scented shaving foam floating. "He looks like that actor," said Snow, cocking her head. "You know that big French one with the crooked nose?" "You look like that actor," concurred Rose, nodding. "He's sort of ugly," said Snow. "And you have to like him." "Exactly," said Rose. "Ugly, like you." "But also likable," said her older sister. "Girls," I said ruefully, "you're going to have to find a way to tell the truth a little less often." "Why?" asked Snow. "Well, for one thing, it hurts people's feelings." "We're sorry," said Rose. "We didn't mean to." "I know," I said. "I know. And B, if you get in this habit of telling men the truth, you'll never find love and get married." "I won't get married anyway," said Rose. "I won't either," said Snow. "How do you know?" I asked. "It seems really stupid," said Snow. "Like cutting off your leg," said Rose. "Every marriage is different," I said. "Get out," said Snow. "Well, you're supposed to be married," said Rose, "but now your wife likes someone else better." "So you won't be anymore?" "More or less accurate," I conceded. "Then why are you defending it?" asked Snow. "Once you were practically normal," added Rose, "but now you carry a roll of toilet paper around in a greasy, disgusting backpack." And she shuddered visibly. It was then that we heard a rare sound, at least rare to us in the tranquility of those summer evenings, car tires crunching on gravel in front of the house. "No way," breathed Snow. "Daddy," said Rose. "It's the third time this summer," said Snow. "The first time lasted for an hour," Rose told me. "The second was on my birthday," said Snow. "He stayed 15 minutes. He brought me a gift certificate." I tensed up, worried I'd get caught with them. My clothes were heaped on the bank except for the boxer shorts I wore. There was a clean line of sight if he came around the corner, but I had other clothes in the hangar, so all I had to do was swim away, swim across to the part of the shore that was hidden from the house by trees, and from there retreat to my hangar. "I should go," I said. "Don't worry, we'll totally distract him," said Rose. They climbed up onto the dock, legs dripping, towels swirled up around their shoulders, feet left wet prints on the dry wood before they slipped into flip-flops. And then the girls were headed up the grassy slope, not running, not eager, just dutiful. I felt a rush of thankfulness that I'd never had children to disappoint, though I wished the girls were my own daughters. Even I would have shone in comparison with the gray doll. I sank down in the water and spied on them, the waterline beneath my nose. I kept my mouth clamped shut. The suit was Undertaker black this time, and I could just make out a silver-colored headset. He talked into that headset as the girls went up the hill to meet him. Rose stepped up toward him awkwardly, as though she wanted to embrace, but he held up his hand and shook his head and kept talking, turning around as he paced. She stepped back. It occurred to me that they would be better off if he died, but it was an academic, impersonal thought. It had nothing to do with me. A second later, it also occurred to me that if someone tore the groom in half, the girls would still have his money, but not his cold and persistent disregard. It was painful, on the other hand, the loss of a father. And with the semi-retarded mother on the brink of death, surprisingly often, due to the repeated self-starving activities, which made her subject to sudden hospital visits, the poor girls might be farmed out to relatives, separated. So as quickly as I had it, I gave up the idea of murdering him. You know, murder goes through your head sometimes, and then goes out again. It's normal, in my opinion. Anyway, the thought had no bearing on subsequent events. I think I'll stop there.